This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. I have talked several times over the course of the last couple of months about states like Colorado and Washington that have legalized recreational use of marijuana and other states that have legalized medical marijuana. But you don't hear a lot of discussion about changing the laws when it comes to harder drugs like crack cocaine or powdered cocaine or methamphetamine or heroin or ecstasy, etc. Part of that may be because in our failed war on drugs for the last two generations, there have been various things told to us about drugs that it turns out may not be true. For instance, there's a long-held truth that if you smoke crack just once, you're going to become an addict. My next guest says that's false, as are many of the things that you think you know about drugs. His name is Carl Hart. He is a professor at Columbia University and the author of a new book called High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery that challenges everything you know about drugs and society. Dr. Hart, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the one I just mentioned. Smoking crack doesn't make you an addict.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Most of the people who smoke crack are not addicts, and we've known this for some period of time. This isn't new. I guess the public's perception is inaccurate for the most part if they believe that sort of thing.
So are you saying that you can be a casual crackhead?
Yeah, when we think about addiction takes work, and most of the people who engage in any behavior are not addicts. And one of the reasons that we believe that someone who smokes crack is addicted is because of the negative portrayals that we've had about crack in the country over the years. We think about shows about drugs like methamphetamine, like Breaking Bad, and all those things. They provide a lot of misinformation for the public and mislead the public, and that has a lot of consequences, particularly for people who use crack cocaine or methamphetamine, even the ones who are addicted. The stereotypes are so horrible. No one wants to be identified as such. Even the ones who are addicted, it's not as they are being portrayed.
Do you think that the notion that you start using it and you'll become addicted and you'll never be able to get off of it is something that keeps people from using drugs like crack?
I think so. I think for some people, yeah, that's absolutely right. But for the people who have used it and who are not addicted or who are addicted, then what about those folks? We fail to reach them. We fail to help them because they don't want to be identified because the stereotypes are so horrible. I think, yeah, you're right. It certainly can prevent some people from using these drugs. I think about my own youth. I certainly didn't use crack in part because of these stereotypes. But it also decreases the likelihood of people thinking critically, because if you accept that nonsense, you're not really thinking critically. And then you're more likely to accept other types of nonsense without thinking critically that might have some dire consequences for people.
Now, you didn't use crack, but you had several members of your family who were drug addicts, right?
Yeah, they certainly.
No, I should ask, when I say that, doctor, correct me, were they drug addicts or were they drug users?
Some were drug addicts and some were drug users.
Okay.
Right.
How did that happen?
How does what happen? I'm sorry.
How did members of your family become addicted to drugs?
Drug addiction in general, people become addicted to drugs for a variety of reasons. Some have co-occurring mental disorders. Others may have lack of opportunity, lack of skills, and the major thing in their life could become the drugs. So a variety of reasons. Drug addiction is a complicated sort of disorder, but I want to make it clear that people who use all of these drugs that we're talking about, the vast majority of them don't become drug addicts. 80-90% don't become drug addicts.
You say in the book that scientists have played a less than honorable role in the war on drugs. How so?
So when we think about the studies that are related to these types of drugs, 90% of these studies are funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and their mission is to mainly focus focus on drug abuse and drug addiction. And drug abuse and drug addiction is only a small percentage, a small amount of effects produced by these drugs. But the data that's produced surrounding these drugs primarily focus on addiction, the pathology associated with the drugs. And so it leads the public to have a skewed understanding of drug effects if all you're seeing being published are these negative things. And so what my point there is that the National Institute on Drug Abuse should focus on pathology, but the scientists should have caveats to their findings to say that these are a small percentage of the effects related to these drugs that we're talking about, but they don't. What happens typically is that they talk about these effects as if they are, as if we have a comprehensive understanding of drug effects, when in fact this is only a small percentage. And so my point is that scientists need to temper some of the conclusions that they make about these drugs, given that they only focus on a small percentage of these effects.
What conclusions have you come to about how we should change our efforts to get people off of drugs?
Well, that's the book, A High Price, is not so much focused on getting people off drugs. I think that's a misguided approach. There are a number of books out here, a number of people talking about getting people off drugs. That's not my focus. My focus is to say that we need to have a better understanding about drugs. We need to educate people about the effects of drugs. We need to educate people about drugs in the same way we educate people about driving automobiles, about having sex. Both driving automobiles and having sex are potentially dangerous activities. But instead of having a war on driving, we teach people how to drive more safely. Instead of having a war on sex, we teach people how to do these things more safely. The same is true with drugs, I'm saying, because you can use drugs safely and you can use them to enhance various type of activities as opposed to trying to rid the society of drugs. Now, my goal is not to encourage people to go use illegal drugs. That's not the goal. My goal is to try and help people who are using these things remain safe. That's my major goal.
And perhaps not be imprisoned at such high rates.
Absolutely. So when you talk about the prison sort of thing, I argue in the book that we should decriminalize all of these drugs. Decriminalization is not legalization. The drug sales still remain illegal, but possession of these drugs will result into a fine, administrative fine, like we do with traffic violation, rather than placing people in jail, because we're arresting 1.5 million people every year for drugs, and 80% of those folks are for possession. Yeah. And so when we think about the last three guys who occupied the White House, all three of those guys engaged in illegal drug use during their young adult years. If they would have gotten caught, they wouldn't have been able to make a contribution to the society. And all three of those guys have made important contributions to the society. So my argument is that, hey, let's enhance the likelihood of more Americans making a positive contribution to this society.
Speaking of contributing to society, in your research, you actually put some addicts in hospitals and gave them a choice in your experiments between crack and money, or meth and money as rewards. And you, if they wanted the crack, you actually gave them the crack or the meth. How do you do that legally? Did you just go on the streets of New York, where I'm sure you can, in many parts of town, buy crack and bring it back to the hospital?
Well, maybe you can, but we didn't do that. So what we did was we got all the appropriate ethical approvals, and there were a number of ethical boards that we had to pass, and we got the approvals, and were able to do these studies. And one thing I want to point out about these type of studies, I know it seems as though this is something that people are shocked by, and I get it, given the hysteria that we've talked about around how we've talked about these drugs. But the thing is that we live in a pretty wealthy society, and a society as wealthy as ours and educated as ours should base their education, their drug policy, their drug treatment on empirical information, on good information. And so that's what we're trying to do with these drugs. We're trying to understand their complete effects and trying to help base a policy, education, treatment on good, solid evidence. So it would be irresponsible of a society not to do these kind of experiments. And so that's the sort of principle that I operate under. And
I think that the research that you've done, Doctor, and the book itself are very important. I hope that they lead towards changes in policies. I fear, however, that fear will drive the day and science will be forced into the backseat again. But I wish you good luck with the book. It's called High Price. Dr. Carl Hart from Columbia University, thanks for joining me here today.
Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.